For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. Australia is in the middle of what has been called an unprecedented outbreak of the mosquito-borne Japanese encephalitis virus. Today, we hope to talk about what frontline physicians should be looking out for when it comes to JEV, as well as prevention and management.
I can speak on behalf of the scientists and animal health and medical public health people involved in this outbreak and saying that it's really rung alarm bells, you know, across the country. What we're seeing and what we've seen has been unprecedented, has really caught us unawares.
That was Dr. David Williams from the Australian Centre for Disease Preparedness at the CSIRO, who is my special guest today. So we know Japanese encephalitis is a mosquito-borne problem. What kind of mosquitoes spread it?
Mainly Culex species mosquitoes.
Are they endemic to Australia?
They are, yep. There's several Culex species that are endemic to Australia. The specific species that vectored the JE virus depends on where we're talking. So in Southeast Asia, there's a particular mosquito called Culex trigenorhynchus, which breeds in rice paddy fields and places like that. But in Australia, what we know so far is a species called Culex anulorostris is the main vector. And that seems to be the cause of the outbreak that we've seen in Southeast Australia this year as well.
Has that come as a surprise?
It's not a surprise that Culex anulorostris is the main vector in Australia because of what we've seen previously in northern Australia. So we've had outbreaks in the Torres Strait Islands in the mid to late 90s. There have also been detections in Papua New Guinea from that species as well. I guess what's interesting is in 2020, we found, or Northern Territory entomologists found Culex trigenorhynchus for the first time in that territory. So that, I guess, raises the prospect that there's potentially another effective vector of JE within Australia.
And how do they get here? Do they get blown here by the wind, or is it a climate change thing? Are things getting more friendly for them in the north of Australia?
I think that's a good question. I think, you know, climate change is leading to increased habitats for mosquitoes all around the world. In relation to how they get here, well, to northern Australia, they can be windblown. So they, under certain cyclonic conditions or seasonal conditions, they can be blown from either Indonesia, where JE is endemic, or from Papua New Guinea, where JE is endemic as well. They can also be introduced through shipping or through aircraft as well. So that can apply to both adult mosquitoes and larvae, coming from all directions.
Yes, indeed.
But in this case, I think that where most of us are thinking is in relation to windborne mosquitoes that have been blown over, either from PNG or Indonesia. That's still, I think, an open question. And we may well have seen multiple introductions. We're still trying to figure that out.
So let's talk about the current outbreak. Is it mainly affecting animals?
It affects humans and animals. In terms of human cases, there are now a total of 41 confirmed and probable cases based on laboratory evidence. Unfortunately, of those, there have been four fatalities. In terms of animal disease, what we've seen so far mainly is disease in pigs, and the way that affects pigs and piggeries is through reproductive disease. So there have been a total of 79 infected piggeries so far, mainly centred around New South Wales and Victoria, but also there have been 17 cases in Queensland and nine infected piggeries in South Australia as well.
So what does it do to pigs?
So it's a reproductive disease, and the most common manifestation, and this is how the disease was first detected in Australia, was through abortion in sows. So the way it presents is mummified or aborted fetuses or weak piglets that are born that may have neurological signs as well, and that typically don't survive very long. The other manifestation is through infertility in boars. So that presents as aspermia or weak or non-motile sperm.
Is this a zoonotic thing? Like, can humans catch it from animals?
Not directly from animals, but yes, it's defined as a zoonotic disease. But the intermediary here is mosquitoes. So humans are infected by biting mosquitoes that are also infected themselves.
Is there human-to-human transmission?
No, and no human-to-pig transmission. Pork is perfectly safe to eat.
So how does JE virus present in humans?
So there are different forms. So the majority of cases or infections, rather, will present either as asymptomatic infections. A proportion will present as mild flu-like illness that will go unrecognized. Most people will shake that infection off. And then we think about less than 1% of cases, Jay, can present as Japanese encephalitis, as the neurological disease. So that's typically preceded by a fever, a headache, sometimes gastrointestinal symptoms. Patients or sufferers can have a stiff neck as well. And then that progresses to neurological disease that can present as deteriorating consciousness and with sudden onset of convulsions as well, particularly in children.
So if somebody rocks up to a GP, how likely is it that a GP is going to go, well, I'm going to test you for JEV? It sounds like there's a lot of mimicking presentation could be going on.
That's right. So I guess it's it presents as many other viral encephalitis presentations do. And for a GP, viral encephalitis should be included as a differential for sure. In terms of considering, Jay, you know, hopefully the message is out there now that particularly in the wet season or summer months, Jay should be a consideration for people that present or children that present with those sort of neurological signs.
Is there any treatment?
There are no antiviral treatments. There is a vaccine, though. In fact, there are two safe and effective vaccines that have been used in Australia for a number of years. One of those is called JE-SPECT, and that's an inactivated vaccine. The other one is called Imagev, and that's a live attenuated vaccine.
I'm chatting today with Dr. David Williams from the Australian Centre for Disease Preparedness at the CSIRO. This podcast accompanies a case study published in the MJA on the first Victorian infant to be diagnosed with JEV in the current outbreak. You can find the link to that case study in the show notes to this podcast. If you're enjoying this episode, you can find our back catalogue at mja.com.au/podcasts, and you can subscribe to our upcoming episodes through your favourite podcast platform by searching for Medical Journal of Australia. Back to our chat. And who's eligible for those vaccines?
So at the moment, each of the states is targeting particular populations and communities, and that's mainly centred around rural communities where piggeries are, where affected piggeries are, particularly workers or people that reside on piggeries, abattoir workers that are handling pigs from those piggeries, also environmental health officers and entomologists that are involved in mosquito surveillance and control in affected areas or where the virus might be circulating, and in addition, laboratory workers who are either handling diagnostic cases or submissions or who are researching JE and handling and growing up the virus in the lab.
Does there need to be heightened biosecurity?
I think there's already a very high level of awareness of the risks of imported mosquitoes, and that's not just through JE, it's through things like in relation to diseases like dengue. Yeah. And malaria. So there are detections made, fairly regularly at various airports and shipping ports of imported mosquito species. So my feeling is that the level of biosecurity is already at a pretty high standard. But certainly JE adds another, I guess, ingredient into that mix, and Culex species mosquitoes will be, I guess, high on the watch list of those agents.
I mean, obviously, this outbreak has made the news. How does it actually rate in terms of alarm, urgency, et cetera?
Yeah, great question. You know, I guess we've heard so much about another disease, COVID, yes, over the last 2 years. And mm-hmm. if you compare the numbers that what we're seeing with JEV, you know, it's obviously quite modest. But at the same time, I can speak on behalf of the scientists and animal health and medical public health people involved in this outbreak and saying that it's really rung alarm bells across the country. What we're seeing and what we've seen has been unprecedented, has really caught us unawares.
Wow.
As I mentioned before, we've had outbreaks in Northern Australia, in the Torres Straits in the mid to late 90s. And I guess the question we had after that outbreak was, why for the years that followed, when we didn't see any JE in the southeast states or even further south in the northern states, mm-hmm. why didn't that happen? And, you know, I guess there was a certain sense of complacency that for whatever reason, JE wasn't going to be, or the virus wasn't going to be transmitted further south. And it's all caught us by surprise, I think. It's also come under the radar, so it hasn't been detected through normal surveillance activities, which have been mainly focused on viruses like Ross River and Murray Valley encephalitis and West Nile Kunjin. So a lot of the mosquito surveillance systems, didn't have JE, on the list of targets. Yeah, it's been unprecedented, and I guess also the fact that it was identified in piggeries before humans is another element of surprise, if you like, but probably in hindsight, not one that should have been such a surprise.
And is the surprise due to location or method of detection?
Good question. A bit of both, I would say. I mean, certainly location. It's what we found was the first case was identified in a Queensland piggery, but then the next few days after, we found cases in all of the four states affected. So it was almost like it was this, you know, large multi-state outbreak. Well, it wasn't large multi-state outbreak. So that was very surprising. It wasn't in a single focused area. It was everywhere. The virus had already been here, we think, since late November, early December. Infecting piggeries throughout the country. So just to take a step back, one thing to remember with the infected piggery cases in sows, what we know about infection is that it needs to occur prior to 60 to 70 days gestation. And if you take into account that the full gestation period is 115 days, that means there's at least 45 days post-infection before you see the outcomes of that disease.
Right.
You know, the sows look perfectly healthy. So
has the public health response been good enough, big enough?
I think so. I've been involved in parts of that, mainly from the animal health perspective, but since it's a zoonotic disease, it lends itself to a One Health response, and that's certainly been the case. All states have responded very rapidly from what I can see, as well as the federal government as well, and there's been a lot of coordination. A lot of working groups got rapidly formed to address various aspects of the response, such as mosquito control in piggeries, the vaccine response and resourcing, surveillance plans as well. So, yeah, I think, you know, everybody's really geared up in response, but also that's been quite rapid and there's been quite good levels of communication across sectors that, you know, I guess historically haven't always had open sharing of information.
Is that a silver lining of COVID?
Certainly between the states, I think that's true to say. I guess what we're seeing here is a much broader level of communication and coordination across the animal health and human health sectors, but also involving industry as well, the pork industry. So they've been heavily involved and have a major stake in what's happening and the sort of control activities that are undertaken. And they're obviously highly motivated to protect their industry.
What does prevention look like in piggeries? Is there a vaccine for the pigs or is it about mosquito control?
It's both. So mosquito control, protecting the pigs from mosquito bites as well. So some piggeries will be able to put up, you know, screens and that sort of thing. Vaccination is something that we're looking at the moment. There are a number of vaccines that are available or produced commercially overseas from Japan and South Korea. And we're looking into what's available and ways of importing them and using them prior to the next season. But that's coming up very quickly. So,
you know,
really the race is on to try and get through that process. Another animal that's affected by JE is horses, and equine JE is relatively common in endemic countries like Japan and Southeast Asia, China, etc. We haven't had any confirmed cases here, but there have been some suspect cases that we're still working through diagnostically, and some of those may prove to be JE cases.
Does it have a similar effect as it does in the pigs?
No, so it's more similar to what we see in humans. So it leads to a neurological disease and encephalitis. The incidence of cases tends to be less than what we see in humans, but the outcomes are more or less the same.
Thank you so much. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.